Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome, everyone, to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. Glad to be here. Glad to have you all listening in. So my name, of course, is Mark Johnston. With me this week is my wonderful wife, Jennifer.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Great. So this week, what we wanted to talk about was we wanted to talk about resistance to change, what that looks like in your marriage. We wanted to talk about maybe what's going on, how to get around that. Because I'm sure if you're out there and you're trying to put some improvements into your relationship, you probably have met with some amount of resistance to the changes that you're making. So we want to kind of clarify some situations going around that and maybe help all of you deal with those issues. But before we get into that, we have the client win of the week. So this is a win from our reboot group, and it comes to us from Damon. Damon says that he had a huge win yesterday. He spoke his first home story about Lent to his wife yesterday. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, excuse me. Home stories are what I call essentially affirmations that we direct toward other people that are paired with actions to reinforce them. So he says, Damon says, Minhee and I are both Catholic. So this has major significance for both of us. Lent is a time for personal transformation. After I finished, I gently probed a bit further and asked her about her feelings and thoughts regarding our relationship. She really let me have it. Absolutely pours out all her feelings and anger about the problem in our married life. She says, the most frequent one was, you don't listen. I responded by saying, yeah, I agree that I didn't listen because I was being arrogant and so on. Her listing as many issues as she can think of, and me gently responding with some affirmations. She finally said, I never, never, never wanted to divorce you. I responded sadly, I understand. You could only take so much. I failed you. I'm so sorry. Shortly thereafter, I told her that I will be doing a lot of online study and workshops to learn how to fix these problems and to become the very best version of myself that I can be. She seemed very happy that I'm doing this, Damon was saying. I said, this work I'm doing is for you, me, and our relationship. I think it will really help us. I've never been able to have this type of deep conversation with her before. We have reached that level four. I assume that he's talking about level four of intimacy in terms of sharing. What a rush, he says. What a major win this is. I think I will sleep better tonight than I have in weeks.
Aww.
So the whole point of this, it's demonstrating that there are ways to really open up conversations, even if things have been a bit closed off.
Right. What would you say would be a major, looking at his win here, the major way he was opening up this conversation that he'd never been able to have before?
Now, I don't know specifically when he says he spoke his first home story, our home message, what he meant by this. But I think it had a lot to do with, basically, it sounded like his wife was really concerned about him not listening to him. And instead of responding or being very defensive, he really tried to give a lot of affirmation or demonstration that he was listening to her.
And I think this demonstrates what we're going to talk about today really well, because, you know, when you have a difference of opinion, depending on how big the divide is, it might be hard for your spouse to hear you. It's like yelling across the room when you're so different. But when he starts validating her point of view, that's very like supportive and gets people to kind of like settle down and listen.
Yeah, it starts to bridge that, gap a bit.
And share how I see you from your perspective, I think feels very validating to people.
I would agree. So on to the topic at hand, because I think it ties in nicely with the win a bit, just like you were saying. So Jen and I were actually thinking about this topic the other week of why is there a lot of resistance to change? And the topic of this discussion came up as we were listening to a speaker that both Jen and I enjoy hearing. His name is Jordan Peterson. He's fairly well known.
He's an academic, a teacher mainly, but he researches psychology really deeply, like Jung and Carl Rogers and things that are already of interest to us. So his perspective is good for understanding this topic, especially.
Now, as I understand it, Jordan Peterson, I believe there's some controversy surrounding him. But, you know, despite what you might think about him, I do believe that he has good ideas.
Yeah, as a person, you might disagree, but his ideas are worth listening to, I believe.
Yeah. So one of the things that he brought up was this idea that people can only take so many steps away from their current position before they start putting up mental resistance. Do you want to explain what
that means? Yeah, so kind of like what we were talking about earlier, like, you know, the further you are apart intellectually or emotionally with your ideas, the harder it is to hear something that's really different than that. So it's easier to have a conversation where you have a difference of opinion, but there are a little bit of similarities, a little bit of crossover, but the less and less crossover you have, and the further the opinions are from each other, the harder it is to bridge that gap, which makes a lot of sense. But people assume, hey, if I bring up the facts, you know, like, obviously they're going to like change their mind, but if they won't, if they're way over here.
You see this a lot in the current political climate, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, whether you are very left-leaning or right-leaning, I would say most people can agree that there are some big differences in opinion and there's some difficulty with each side really considering or listening to the other side.
And what's interesting is this idea has actually been studied. Like, people cannot hear things and accept them that are outside of these bounds of so many steps away. So you can maybe listen, I don't know exactly, like 3 steps away from where you are on both ends. Like, you can listen to someone on the right here or on the left here from where you are, your position. And it doesn't have to be political. It could be about religion. It could be about life values, parenting challenges. But if you're more than like a few steps away and you're over here, they were just going to immediately feel defensive and to kind of shut you down.
Now, if we apply this to marriage issues, if either partner is taking a really extreme stance, let's say that they're saying, okay, divorce is the only option, and I absolutely hate my spouse. It means that even going into a neutral position, trying to discuss a neutral position, might be too much. It might be taking the situation too far. You know, politically, we can say, okay, left or right leaning, and, you know, here let's bring it to this part in the middle. A lot of us can understand sometimes that middle position is too hard, but it happens in relationships as well.
Right. It depends how far they are from the center.
Yeah.
You know, where if you can even go to the center, even go to a neutral position.
So, I mean, we could even look at that in terms of really highly committed or really highly attached couples. If you're at this position and you're deeply, deeply in love and so attached, almost to the point of being like enmeshed, you know, maybe in an unhealthy spot, you say, hey, maybe we need to have a little bit of space from each other. You know, arguably a more neutral position, that might be very difficult for someone who is very enmeshed in their relationship. And it might bring up a lot of harsh feelings and big arguments.
Yeah.
So why is there so much resistance to these foreign ideas? And I think there's a lot of thoughts that come up when it gets to that point, and when you have taken too many steps away from a person's position.
Right. You might have let this go for years, and you've drifted and drifted and drifted, and not really talked about things or brought some of these important subjects back towards the center a little bit, because you don't have to agree on everything. Obviously not, but you should have some sort of like a little bit of closeness that could be bridged if it's necessary. So one of the reasons why it might feel so foreign is that resistance might feel wrong to them. Like what you're presenting might feel like a very wrong idea.
I've seen this sometimes when people are really not wanting to hear someone else's position. They don't, you know, like, especially if the person is described as stubborn, they might really have an aversion to feeling wrong about something. And so in this case, it's harder for them to go too many steps away from their position. That's, you know, the stubborn person, the person who really resists feeling wrong, is going to have a harder time taking view or considering views further from the position. Other things that really create this rigidity or this difficulty in considering other positions is if someone's position is turned into a quote unquote a moral position rather than considering it an opinion.
And when you do that, when you make it about like morality, it almost becomes a part of who you are. Like it's your personality. Like, so they feel might feel like they're attacking you. Mm-hmm. Like you're not a good person. You know, when that's not what they mean, they might be trying to talk about the topic neutrally, but you feel like it's a part of who you are.
No, I'm not going to go too deep into this because I didn't talk to Jen ahead of time, but we actually, I think, had a discussion recently where our differences in opinion, we were examining whether our differences in opinion were because of moral choices. So, I mean, even us, we recognize sometimes we do have differences in opinion. Now, we have very open conversations like this. Yeah. So we are able to take a look at this and say, hey, have one of us taken a moral stance on this when it's not necessary? I mean, we've had years of practice, you know, using a lot of these tools, and we're used to examining different points of view. But, you know, I'll admit some of our views became a little bit rigid in this discussion because it started to touch on these positions of feeling, okay, this is the moral position and this is not.
Because it could be the way you grew up, your conditioning, and that does feel like a little bit like your personality. It's ingrained in you, and you wonder, is that because I've been conditioned to feel these things about this topic, or is it because this is what I truly believe and there needs to be some soul searching? Yeah. Because if it is something you truly believe and hold dear, then hold on to that and try to like talk about it. So you do have to kind of consider and, you know, get your own personal revelation on whether you feel strongly enough about that thing for it to matter.
Other things that can prevent you from someone from like considering too many, or, you know, not having enough consideration for further steps away from their position is if they have tied their position into like a value system, as in, if they are saying to themselves, I have to stand up for myself. This is the right thing for people to do. It's not okay for me to be a wimp. It's not okay for me to share emotion. Facts are so much more important. We're talking about resistance to change. Just to pick right back up where we were talking about why there might be some rigidity, why there might be some resistance to consider other people's positions or opinions. And like I said, I was saying just before we got cut off, it might be because an individual has tied their position into their value system. Like what they are doing is the right way to handle what is going on.
And when you get like that, sometimes you're like, feelings don't matter because this is either right or wrong. It becomes very, very black and white thinking, and very rigid, like you mentioned. And so overcoming that can be a little bit challenging because you don't want them to feel like what they're identifying with makes them a good or bad person. Like you don't want it to become about their personality. You want the issues to be the issues.
So the last thing that might create a little bit more rigidity or a lack of consideration is if you or your partner feel like your position is threatened and there's a need to defend it. And we know if you've really done your homework, you know that defensiveness is a really big problem within relationships and can sometimes be, just even by itself, something that is a pitfall and can really do some damage. But this particular situation, it creates that rigidity, much like these other things. If you feel like if I let go of my position in the lease, if I start considering another position, then I'm going to lose my own position. It really creates that rigidity, that lack of ability to consider other people's positions themselves. Yeah,
they might not see a situation where both people can come out feeling like we are both heard.
Mm-hmm. And that really creates a lot of rigidity and a lack of consideration. So not feeling heard, it does a lot there. So, I mean, we're talking about this. How does this really show up within a marriage? You know, what are some of these concepts or ideas that people might be getting stuck on? What do you think?
I would say, in terms of commitment, communication, sharing their feelings, like, is important. Maybe they've been shut down so many times. They're like, he's never going to listen. Why even try? Parenting styles, conflict resolution.
So one of the things that, I think a lot of people who are in this Facebook group, a lot of people who seek out services, they're looking at this and they're saying, okay, we need to have some commitment to the relationship. Why can't they just decide to fix things? But this is one of these foreign ideas that if they are saying, I want a divorce, and you're way over here and saying, I want 100% commitment, it's too many steps away.
So instead of being one or two steps away, you're 10, 20, 50, depending on how far you guys feel like these differences are.
And this is probably why those discussions over commitment get shut down hard.
Yeah.
Same thing with communication. If they are saying, I can't talk to you at all, it's too painful, you're too controlling, or whatever excuse that they're giving, and you're saying, you need to be very deep, you need to share how you feel, why are you so upset with me? And like these two opposing positions
are too far. Yeah, so I guess what we're trying to say is we need to start moving a little bit closer. It might not be where you want to be. Like, you have an ultimate goal of, like, you know, being all the way there with understanding each other, but you might just, like, slowly move the positions.
You might also have, like, Jen mentioned, I think one of the things that you said was parenting styles. I know you and I have clashed. Now, our styles aren't terribly, terribly different, but I tend to be a little bit firmer with the children, and you tend to be a little bit more soft. And we've had some clashes where I felt like there needed to be a little bit more firmness in there. And what we ended up, you know, doing with a lot of these cases where Jen and I clash is we try to find positions that are a little bit closer to the other person and we make some compromise.
And I feel like we both have to ask the same question when we try to fix this of how can I give a yes in some way? Like, what ways am I willing to budge? What ways are actually really important to stick to my guns? Talking about parenting, you might be like, okay, because we had an issue with possibly getting a pet. And at first, we were over here, like, with no pet, or the kids need a pet. But then we could kind of be like, well, what circumstances would it be okay? What kind of pets would be okay? Can we think about this? Maybe there's some timing. Maybe we wait a while. You know, before, like, the kids need to get slightly older, there could be a yes in there somewhere where you can just bridge that just a little bit closer, where you feel heard, you don't have to give in all the way, but you can also be a little bit yielding and give a little bit of a yes to your partner. I think that feels really rewarding for the partner to have just that tiny bit of allowance.
And I think this is one of the quickest routes to success and with this particular problem. If you have really opposing views and you feel like your partner has really put up their walls and is really getting defensive and won't budge, there are a lot of ways to remove this resistance or even lessen it. And like, yes, our example here, you know, is something fairly benign, but there were some really high feelings.
Tears. Our 14-year-old was in tears. So like we had to kind of like talk about that. It became an emotional issue.
Mm-hmm. So what we ended up doing there, like Jen said, was we made compromises that took the position a little bit closer in the direction of the other mm-hmm. person, so that our views could be, you know, could be considered a little bit easier. Now, I will admit that we've, in the topic of pets, we've taken some increasing steps towards having more pets in the house. I will admit I'm a bit of a grump in this case. And I, you know, when we, for many years, we have had no pets, and I've made some compromises over the years to, we'll have some small caged pets, you know, mm-hmm. bunnies and guinea pigs. Right. And now we're over here. But, you know, the reason why I'm sharing that is it illustrates something big, in that even if you have very opposing views, if you take baby steps towards each other, towards the your other partner, it can shift views over time. So perhaps they are way over here and saying, I will not be committed to this relationship anymore. But if you say, hey, well, why don't we just, we don't need to be 100% committed to this relationship. Why don't we just have a small baby step? Why don't we just be committed to having good communication? Why don't we just commit to not being rude to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we commit to not treating each other unkindly?
Or talking about each other kindly in front of the children. It could be very tiny allowances.
And those allowances allow for further steps towards what you may want.
And that's important. It's so important that you can yield on some things, but understand yourself well enough to know what is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what will I not give up, but what can I give to my partner as a gift of understanding, as a gift of validation for them?
I think a big piece in this is examining yourself, and do you have some resistance in allowing for differences in perspective? Are you able to consider your partner's perspective and why they might hold that position?
Right.
And can you actually allow for some differences there?
And I think in terms of, like, you know, right, wrong, sometimes that can be hard to do. If you're like, no, that's morally wrong. End of story. And you can be like, okay, yes, you might find it morally wrong, but like, how did it happen? Your partner is probably not a terrible person or a terrible human being. So like, what things started to happen that had allowed that to come into the relationship, into the marriage? So just kind of like just beginning to like undo that hard thinking that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even compartmentalizing, like saying, hey, my partner, I still love them and I think this way about them and I don't like this thing that they're doing. I see the thing they're doing and who they are is different. So I don't feel so morally or emotionally charged all the time.
I think what you're talking about here is really taking some time to understand some of the reasons behind your partner's perspective. I think it's really hard to be really upset with someone else if you have taken that time. Mm-hmm. It becomes much easier to make some compromises and makes it a lot easier to approach the situation with a lot more calm.
That's true.
Further, so that's, I mean, for yourself, if you're trying to soothe your partner possibly, I think a big tool in your toolbox is going to be a lot of validation. Not necessarily agreeing with your partner and giving in, but expressing how their perspective, their position might make sense.
Or not even if you don't agree with their position, you could at least say, I see that you're upset and I'm sorry you're upset.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to feel good. Like, that could just be the baby step for validation. Like, you don't have to even agree with them, but you could be sad that they're so upset or they feel so strongly about this.
Yeah, validation is, you know, we look at, you know, the root word there. It's just, you know, valid. You know, it's about making your partner's perspective feel valid. Have you given it value?
Yeah, or even saying, I know we have a difference of opinion here, but you are important to me.
Mm-hmm. All of that is adding value or validation to your partner's perspective and can really help with lowering defenses and make it easier to make some compromise. Mm-hmm. So there are some mistakes, though, in trying to do some of this that tend to shut things down quite quickly. I do think that if there's any amount of rigid thinking on either side, we talked a little bit about this and what creates some of that rigidity. But if there is this black and white thinking or good, bad thinking or right and wrong thinking, what I'm doing is right, what they are doing is wrong. What I'm doing is good, what they're doing is bad. It really, we talked about it. It makes it so that you can consider fewer steps in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that if there's a lack of consideration for others' perspectives, like if there's this lack of validation, it really can shut down a conversation. You know, so if you yourself lack are lacking some amount of validation towards your partner, they will be shut down. They will feel that way.
Right, and that will move you even further apart.
Mm-hmm. I think further, some mistakes are wanting too much control. Like if you have this kind of sense of, I know what's best, this is what's best, and it has to be this way.
And the thing about that that's so damning here is when people feel controlled sometimes, even if it's right, you know, your position is where they'd like to go. Sometimes that feeling of control can be overwhelming. And they don't like that. They could withdraw further.
I think it roots in a sense of a lack of consideration.
Yeah.
That's where that sense of feeling controlled comes from.
And you know, when I start trying to control a situation, I realize, I take a step back, I realize that, hey, I'm in fear a little bit here. Like, I have some understanding for myself. Like, and I have to understand that no matter how much I strongly believe about something, it doesn't matter that my partner or my spouse has to also feel that way for the real change to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They might really want to please me, but they have to start buying into it as well for a real change to happen. They have to want it for themselves, not just because you want it. So there has to be a letting go of that control to some extent.
Other mistakes are passivity, as in waiting for others to act, or meaning not communicating what's expected or wanted, or being highly critical. Either of these are going, you know, a lot of these are demonstrating rigidity in mm-hmm. thinking, lack of consideration, lack of respect. And that's really the theme in all the mistakes. Now, I do want to answer this question here before we go on and, you know, talk about how this applies. So we have a comment here asking, what do you do when your husband has an affair and moves out and stays with her? Now, it might not immediately seem like it applies to the topic of conversation, but it does. The commenter here is basically saying, there should be this high amount of commitment. And here is the husband who's saying, I'm done with the relationship. I'm moving in with this affair partner.
Right. So it sounds like you're very many steps apart at this point.
So I've worked with a number of individuals who are dealing with this very situation where an affair is revealed and the partner who's engaging in the affair jumps into that relationship fully. And I think that quite often the mistake that's made in those scenarios is this demand that they stop things right away. Now, sure, if they're willing to do that, great. If they're really sorry, repentant about the affair, if they're feeling very guilty about the affair,
right,
then that tells me that their position is not so far from your own. It means that they have some amount of commitment to the relationship, but a situation where they are moving in with the affair partner tells me that they are not. And any high demands of commitment towards the marriage, it's going that those attempts are going to fall flat on their face. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at other steps that are closer to your position, but not so far from their own. As in, hey, you're having this affair. I want to make sure that we have good communication. I want to make sure that we have a stable environment for our children. I want to make sure that I'm working on you know, the concerns that you might have had with our relationship so that we can maintain a decent relationship. You know, this is especially applicable if there are kids involved in the scenario. If they, the cheating partner is not moving towards a divorce, you know, if there are things that are tying them back to the marriage relationship, it becomes easier to say, to justify a position somewhere moving right. closer to the relationship.
Because perhaps you were here, you know, as a spouse, but maybe you're closer with as a family, and you can work with what you have and mm-hmm. start making that feel more strong or better, like creating stronger ties with that, with your communication, with maybe there's some hot button issues that need to be like really cleared up. Like maybe there's active damage happening when you guys are together. So maybe just cleaning up a little bit of that could help you be heard more.
But yeah, I will say that if you really hit hard in the scenario and say, you need to be here, you have to drop the affair, this is not acceptable, I can't believe what you... You know, there's a high amount of criticism, there's a high amount of control, there's a lack of consideration for how the other partner might feel, it will fail. It just... I could easily predict that outcome. I could probably give a 90% confidence sort of statement that that's going to be a failing situation.
Mm-hmm. But you've seen this happen many times where this is able to be fixed. And in those cases, when it is fixed, what do they start doing initially?
They start building up the basic relationship, like making sure that it feels comfortable to be around each other, making sure that their communication is good, making sure that their interactions are enjoyable. You know, which are all positions that in the cases where it worked out, that the cheating partner wanted. They wanted easier interactions with their spouse. So once that happened and became normal, it became easier to say, okay, we actually, maybe we're going to flirt a little bit. Maybe we're going to mm-hmm. actually touch on some romance. And then from there, it became easier to say, I need some commitment and I need you to drop the affair.
Mm-hmm.
In all cases, it was not a one-step solution. It was moving the position slowly towards a committed relationship.
Yeah. And you can absolutely say, hey, like, this is where my boundary is. I feel very strongly that this is wrong, mm-hmm. but I do care about you, and I would like to fix this. So let's work on this and this element.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean like you're like, yeah, go have an affair. Like, you can hold your boundaries and say, this is hurtful to me, without yelling and screaming. You can go do that and then come back a little bit more calm and collected and say, this is very hurtful. This is what I need from you. Like, please be here for the kids' soccer games. Please do this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, to wrap things up, don't immediately shut down your partner's position, even if it seems like an unhealthy position. Try to make some compromise and try to take smaller steps towards a position of health, and you're much more likely to see success there. So on to our marriage myth buster. We always like talking about unhealthy ideas, unhealthy positions, mm-hmm. things that we have heard over the years or even in the Facebook group. This week's myth, so to speak, is you should do everything together as a couple if you really, you know, if it's a really healthy relationship.
And it's possible you enjoy doing everything together, but it's also very, very possible you have, you know, different interests, and that's okay.
Have you ever heard friends express this idea like, oh, my husband or my wife didn't want to spend time with me and this is a terrible thing? And have you ever heard that?
I think I have. And they might even resent those differences. Mm. And that can lead to bigger problems. So it's okay to say you enjoy fly fishing and I don't.
I mean, I'm not going to name names, but I can think of some situations where, like, the husband wanted to work on their car or their bike, or wanted to engage in their own hobby in some way. And right. there's a lot of resentment over...
Because the spouse doesn't enjoy that.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do think that this idea comes from a place of insecurity.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's... My guess is if it's feeling like really insecure, like that your spouse wants to have a separate time doing this activity or this hobby, that maybe like the things that you have in common aren't, you're not doing enough together. Mm-hmm. So as long as like build that up, perhaps go on date night so that when he wants to work on the car, it doesn't feel like such a sacrifice.
Well, so I do think like, I think you're right. You know, the healthy position is balancing it out. But like this idea of like, I need to, I can't have my partner have their own hobby. It's selfish for them to go do this other thing. Mm-hmm. It's coming from this insecure place. Now, maybe the insecurity is justified. Maybe there's very little pleasant interactions between them. But it does come from this place of saying, I'm not sure whether I'm acceptable, good enough, competent enough, whether our relationship is good enough. Or that we are secure enough in our relationship, and I worry about where it's going.
Yeah. And the differences can even, you can change your perspective on this and say the differences bring like enriching topics of conversation. Like you spend some time apart and then you have something interesting to share that you weren't together doing.
Well, I mean, so you're talking about like going off and having your own separate interests. Is that really the healthy position?
It could be. It depends on how, I guess, different your interests are. And you still need those things met so that you can be a happy, well-rounded person. So
I'll just say that I have looked up actually some studies on this.
Okay.
So they do tend to show that a healthy individual life tends to improve a shared life, a marriage. So if a person feels more fulfilled individually and has their own time to pursue interests, then the moments that they do have together are more enriching. Mm-hmm. Now, how much individual interests and individual hobbies versus time together, there's a little bit of give and take there. I mean, there's lots of... professional opinions about how much time a couple should spend together. By the way, I think the general consensus is about 5 hours a week of time.
I think I've heard that, yeah.
Time together. But, you know, as long as you are getting, you know, having that investment of time into the relationship, then the individual pursuits and hobbies can actually be a very healthy thing.
Yeah.
You and I, how do we handle this?
We definitely have some diverting interests and that's okay. But I will hear you out when you're excited about something. I might actually be excited because your excitement is contagious and enthusiasm. So like I will show a little bit of interest in your hobbies, but maybe not 100%. So you go off and do them a little bit more than I will.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. Maybe I like doing home renovation projects and every now and then you'll take some interest in it, but mostly it's my thing, and that's okay.
I do know that some evenings, one or either one of us might indicate to the other, hey, I just need some alone time. I need to have time to myself.
And it's good to be able to verbalize that. Like, I know I want to spend time with you, and here's when I will, but right now I feel a little burnout. I'd like to do this thing.
And I think our ability to do that comes a lot from our sense of security in the relationship.
Right. I think because our interactions that are shared, our interests that are shared seem to be strong and healthy.
Mm-hmm. And I could easily see that if I did not feel as secure about our relationship, if you were to tell me that you needed time away from me, I could see how that could be damaging.
It could be like, you don't care about me. I'm not important. Mm-hmm. You could start receiving these unsaid messages, but we make sure we're very clear that, hey, you're important, but yes, I'm feeling like I need this other thing right now.
Exactly. So, to wrap things up, you don't need to do everything together. And actually, if you have a lot of communication and security surrounding the relationship, it can actually be beneficial or enriching to have time apart and with time with individual interests. So that is our topic for the week. That's our Mythbuster. If you want to know more about this, let us know. We're always open to ideas in terms of what we would like to discuss in the podcast. Put it in the comments. We like to hear from you. Next week, we are going to be talking about sexual intimacy during separation and affairs. Is this a good idea? Is this not? And we're going to be diving deep into that topic right there. So hope you all come back and listen again.
Have a great week.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.